Jayam Vishnu Pada Paramahansa Parivrata Kacharya Ashtutta Vishatma Shri Srimad Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai Samabeta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande Hari. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshutadine Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. So everyone is ready for the second days of our Bhakti Shastri classes. I actually suggested that we could have some cordless microphones. Maybe now it hasn't been arranged. I told Radhasundari yesterday, because when you are doing the reading and question answers, we thought it would be nice to have some cordless microphones. Anyway, so can everybody hear everybody? When they read, when they ask questions, you don't hear? I also was having some difficulty, especially when it went to. What we can probably do, anyway, we'll try to get the cordless phones. And we can also try to do is make the tables a little more. Not working.
No.
Yesterday, Rupanuga Prabhu came and he corrected. He kind of he fixed it up yesterday. The connection is on. I see. So in the afternoon we will see. How many actually, like yesterday there were quite some guests, and there are still some guests, and I think the number will be reducing gradually. The first day we had the maximum number, second day a little less, third day will probably be even lesser, and it's working fine. Yeah, now it's okay. Yeah, I think. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So, anyway, we will bring the tables closer together, and that will be easier, taking the number of the participants. And how did you like the game yesterday? Huh? Yeah? Exciting? We didn't decide which side won yesterday. It was all win-win. Both sides won.
I thought some of the questions were kind of tough.
Huh?
Okay,
I actually wanted to say something about that. Whether the questions would be to get to know. Or the question is going to be to get the other party. So if it is a matter of getting the other party, then let us prepare for that. Or if it's a matter of question, then let us be. It's a matter of knowing. I do not. When we ask questions, with two intentions. One is, when I don't know something, I ask in order to get to know. And sometimes we ask questions to check out the other person's knowledge. So what should be the purpose of our asking questions?
When you don't know something.
Yeah? When you don't know something, yeah? That will become very easy. Why I was asking it is because, I mean, why I made this point is because, like, if it is a question to stump the other guy, then we'll have one condition, that when one is asking the question, he must have the answer himself. So if the other party cannot answer, then he'll have to provide the answer. No, there are two types of questions. One is when you do not know and you are asking the question. And other is you are asking to find out how much the other person knows. Right? Just like, you know, during the time of examination, the question paper is there, the questions are asked. But those questions are to check the other person out. Anyway, I think it will be better to just be, let the question be sincere. Pertaining to that verse, what we need to know, so we ask that. Right? It should be simple. We are all friends. We are not enemies. We are nobody's enemies. We are everyone's friends, especially here. So, yes. Can you give an example?
An example, when there's one person is asking about this, and the one other person is answering them. Maybe there's also like different other person to answer to this question. And maybe somebody else has also like some other person has some answer to this question.
Well, we can probably get into that later, but now that we are just covering the basic theme. So let us stick to this way. Why I am asking, why I am getting you into this? For three reasons. One reason is, you are reading the verse yourself. And then the other person is asking the question. That way he is also going deep into that verse while he is listening to it. And when you are answering the question, then you are also enriching yourself. Because the purpose is to learn. Purpose is to get acquainted with Bhagavad Gita. Purpose is to study Bhagavad Gita. And the purpose is to go deep into Bhagavad Gita. So this is one of the ways to just go deep into Bhagavad Gita. Like, read it. I mean, you see, this group of students, you all, we all have come here to study Bhagavad Gita, but you all know Bhagavad Gita. You read Bhagavad Gita?
No.
At least, who didn't read? You didn't read? I see. Are you participating in the class? Bhakti Shastri?
Basically, observing how the Balai Gita
stays. Beg your pardon?
The Balai Gita stays.
If you like, you will stay.
Yeah, yeah.
So far, did you like it?
It's all right.
It's all right. Okay. Now we'll also see, if we like you, then we'll keep you. And so, most of you have, let's see, how many of you read Bhagavad Gita? raise your hands. Yeah. Okay. You didn't read Bhagavad Gita? No? Palu, you didn't? I see. Okay. Anyway, so now make it a point to read Bhagavad Gita, because devotees must know Bhagavad Gita. This is a basic, this creates the basic foundation. What we are here for, we'll understand it by reading Prabhupada's books. So that's why you have to be very seriously studying Srila Prabhupada's books. And yeah, the point I was making is that, so most of you know Bhagavad Gita. Okay, very good, very good. So, yeah, we will come to that in course of our discussions. How to study carefully. Study actually means go deep into it. Like, really understand. So, and there is no limit to the depth of Bhagavad Gita. You can go deeper and deeper and deeper, still you will not come to the bottom. So that is what spiritual knowledge is. It's absolute. It's absolute means it's endless. There's no limit to its depth. So go deeper and deeper and deeper. That's why you'll notice that each time you read Bhagavad Gita, each time you read different verses of Bhagavad Gita, you will get newer and newer revelations. Didn't it happen? So that is what we are dealing with. But in a course like this, what we are trying to do, we are starting from the very basics. But we are trying to lead you to generate the interest to go deeper and deeper into it. Deeper, you have to go yourself. We cannot perfectly and completely do it for yourself. Spiritual life is an individual development. The others, the teachers, can help you, right? But ultimately it is you who will have to achieve it. Just like in regular studies, throughout the year you study, but then when you sit for the exams, who writes the answers? Can you expect your teacher to write the answer? No, you have to answer the questions yourself. And that is not the... passing the exams is not everything. After that, you become... when you become accomplished in that subject, in that trade or in that profession, then you have to do it yourself. Like, for example, somebody is studying to become a doctor. He studies, he sits for the exams, he passes the exams. When it comes to exams, he has to sit for the exams. It is he who has to write the exams and pass, then only he'll pass the exams. But then, is the goal of life is to just to pass the exams or practice that science, medicine? You practice. And when you practice, then it is you who will have to do it yourself. And accordingly, you get your expertise and reputation. Everybody who passes medicine doesn't become a good doctor, right? Some are okay doctors, but some are very good doctors. Isn't it, Krishna Chaitanya? You are a doctor yourself. Like some doctors are world-renowned. Similarly, you know, you study science, become a scientist. Not everybody becomes a scientist, right? Some become scientists, and some of them become world-renowned. So this is it. So similarly, in our spiritual life, it is entirely up to us how we are going to, how deep we are going to go, and how realized we will become. And the teacher can only guide you. Teacher can only guide you. So, okay. So now we will... Yesterday, we covered the first chapter. First chapter, we did not go so elaborately discussing, because first chapter, as I mentioned, is just setting the scene. Bhagavad Gita actually begins, the real subject matter of Bhagavad Gita begins from the second chapter. It begins from the second chapter. And so today we are beginning, we are starting the second chapter. Second chapter we will cover today and tomorrow. Four sessions, four classes will deal with second chapter, that is Wednesday, Thursday. Then Friday and Saturday we will deal with the third chapter. But second chapter is very long, so second chapter may even go one session more. Let us see how it goes. And then the last session probably will have a general overview of what we studied. And Saturday will be my last class. And then after the Saturday afternoon session, we'll have a pizza party for all the students. We'll have a get-together. And, okay, so let's do it the same way, like we did yesterday. Let's read, because first of all we have to read the verses, and then as we go along, topics will come up, and we will deal with them accordingly.
I was just thinking, maybe that's just me, but if I'm reading, if a particular verse we're reading and say some highlights from that verse are not coming up, maybe if you can,
Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, sure. Good. Very good point. We'll do that. When it comes to an important verse, we will elaborate on that. Okay, that's true. That's why I actually wanted to have the microphones, cordless microphones. Can somebody quickly go and ask Radha Sundari? Shamsundar, maybe you can. Should he wait for you or can carry on? Okay, so what we'll do. Maybe we won't ask questions this time. We'll just read and discuss briefly, right? Okay, you start from first verse.
Sanskrit?
2-1, yeah, Sanskrit and English.
Sanjaya vacha tam tatha kripaya vishtam ashru purna kulikshanam vishidantam idam vakyam uvacha madhusudana. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words.
Yeah, so do you want to say something on this, what you understood of this verse? Okay, so for example, like the first chapter described Krishna and Arjun came to the battlefield, and then Arjun became overwhelmed with emotion and grief seeing all his relatives in the enemy line. And he was expressing his grief. So now the second chapter begins with Sanjay is telling Dhritarashtra that seeing Arjun in that condition, Madhusudan and Krishna started to speak. Okay, you read this next verse.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Kutustva Kasmalam Nidam Vishame Samupasitam Anarya Anarya Dustam Asvaryam Akirti Vipanam Arjuna. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy.
So, what is Krishna? Now Krishna is responding to Arjuna's situ condition. So what is the first thing Krishna is telling? Krishna is telling that Arjuna, I'm surprised that you are such a noble person and you have become overwhelmed with such emotion, which is actually an impurity in your character. So he's saying that kutastva, how? Kashmalam. Kashmalam means impurities. So how did these impurities come upon you? What is this impurity? This impurity is the weakness. Can a Kshatriya afford to be weak? Kshatriya is the symbol of power. So power and weakness, do they go hand in hand?
No.
So that's why Krishna is pointing out that it is not befitting you. Oh, thank you so much. So, it sure works. Yes. You see, what Prabhupada is saying Prabhupada is not praising Arjuna for his weakness. Prabhupada is saying that from the materialistic point of view, what Arjuna was doing was right. What Arjuna's attitude was praiseworthy from the materialistic point of view. But from Krishna's point of view, was it praiseworthy? No. Otherwise, why Krishna is saying, telling Arjuna, kutastva kashmalamina, how come there is this impurity in you? And bishame samupasthitam, at this very critical moment, you are displaying this kind of weakness. Because this is not the time to become weak. And also, here we can consider the background. Everyone tried to stop that battle. It is not that Arjuna was scheming to get them into this fight. Arjuna tried, Krishna tried, Bhishma tried, Vasudev tried, everyone tried to stop. But Duryodhan was adamant. So that's why Krishna is telling that, look, we all tried to stop this battle. But Duryodhan is not going to listen. He has forced it upon you. So you are a warrior. And when it has been forced upon you, how can you back out? So in order to understand Arjuna's situation, we have to consider the background. Therefore, it is important that when we read Bhagavad Gita, we actually have to consider the background of Bhagavad Gita. Right? All this is not happening just like this. This happening had a long history behind it. Working? Okay, sure, you can do that. I'm sorry to trouble you.
No, it's not trouble. I'm sorry, this wasn't brought to my attention.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Because the cordless phone, the mic can be anywhere. And here, Krishna uses another very important expression. He calls anarja. Arja, the word arja. Maybe you can put the mic here so that, you know, otherwise people may step onto that. Just
Hari Bol.
Yeah. Yeah. So we can bring the speaker in here. Yeah, right. You want to keep it there, or what if you keep it on the floor? Yeah, on the floor will be. It'll be evenly, the sound will be evenly distributed. Hare Krishna. All right? Okay. Now, let me try it out. Shamsundar, take it to that end and ask one devotee to speak. Okay, fine. Good. Switch it off now. So, the expression anarya means uncivilized. Arya means civilized and anarya means uncivilized. So, actually Krishna is using a very heavy expression. He is calling Arjun uncivilized. Why? Because a civilized person is a person who follows his dharma. What is the criteria for civilization? According to the Vedic understanding, civilization means one who is situated in his spiritual understanding. Vedic understanding of civilization is not a matter of living in nice houses and dressing nicely and so forth. The Vedic understanding of civilization is being situated in spiritual knowledge and acting on the spiritual platform. The word arja means civilized. And civilized means one who is spiritually well-informed and acts on the spiritual platform. And in that understanding, Varnashram Dharma has been established. Varnashram Dharma is the consideration of civilization. That society is divided according to different varnas decided by the guna and karma. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness, they are brahmanas. Those who are situated in the mode of passion, they are kshatriyas. Those who are in the mixed mode of passion and ignorance, they are vaishyas. And those who are in ignorance, they are sudra. But even though the sudras, one may be a sudra, he is civilized. The antajas, the ones, those who are below sudras, those who do not follow varnashram, they are considered to be uncivilized. Therefore, it is actually a very big insult to Arjun to call him anarja, uncivilized. But Krishna is pointing out to Arjun that a civilized person will never behave like that. A person who is civilized, he'll act according to his varna. You are a warrior, you have to fight. You have come to a battlefield. You are not, this discussion is not going on in your bedroom. It's in a battlefield. And this is no time to express your sentiment. And in order to wake up Arjun, Krishna is using such harsh words. Later on also we'll see, Krishna is actually speaking in such a strong way to wake Arjun up. Anarja Jushtam Ashwargam Akirti Karam Arjuna. Akirti, infamy. This will simply bring infamy to you. And will prevent you from going to the higher planes of existence, higher level of consciousness. Okay, go to the next verse.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
How does this different groups of varnas establish religion? How does it help establish?
Maybe you can give him the mic. Huh?
How does the
What I was asking is, how does these four categories of varnas help in the establishment of religious principles? And it is considered as dharma. So how does a Brahmin to act as a Brahmin, a Kshatriya to act as a Kshatriya, how does it?
Okay.
Is there a mundane understanding of that?
Yeah, good. Did everybody hear the question now? Okay. See, what is the link between varnashram and religious principles? That's your question. What is the link? How does it establish dharma? You see, varnashram basically means acting according to one's natural propensity. For example, those who are in the mode of goodness, they develop one kind of characteristics. Those who are in the mode of passion, they develop another kind of characteristics. Completely different. A person who is in a mode of goodness, he doesn't really want to enjoy this material nature. But he practically has nothing to do with this material nature. Therefore, he withdraws himself from the society, lives in a solitary place, and cultivates the spiritual development or intellectual development. That's a Brahman. But those who are in the mode of passion, they want to enjoy the world. So you see the difference of nature between the people in the mode of goodness and the mode of passion, right? And they develop different characters. Like for example, among the animals also we see that although they're animals, all the animals are not like this, not the same. A cow behaves in one way and a lion behaves in another way, right? Both are animals, but look at the cow. How does the cow behave? He's very peaceful, very gentle, you know, very docile, and is always willing to benefit others. Whereas a lion, he's a ruler, he's a controller, right? And he has his nature. If he wants something, he'll just go get it. But will a cow do that? No. Cow is just happy with whatever is provided. Some grass, there's plenty of grass. And the cow will just. So this is how we see that different people have different characters due to the different modes of influence of the modes of nature. Now, accordingly, so varnashram is dividing the society according to the propensity of the individual. Like, different people have different attitudes, different likes and dislikes. And when they are allowed to act accordingly, or when they have the opportunity to act accordingly, that is what varnashram, especially the varna system. But when this attitude or these propensities are directed towards Krishna consciousness, that means acting, Brahmanas are acting for their Krishna consciousness. Kshatriyas are acting with Krishna consciousness, understanding that Krishna is there and they are actually Krishna's subordinate servants. Then it becomes Daiva Varnashram or spiritual Varnashram. But if people just act according to their propensity but not for Krishna consciousness but for their own sense gratification, then that is called Asuri Varnashram, demoniac. So there are two types of varnashram. One is Daivi Varnashram or divine varnashram, Krishna conscious varnashram, and the other one is demoniac varnashram. So when the varnashram is Krishna centered, then it is Daivi or divine. When it is self centered, then it is Asuri. So that is the difference of varnashram. Like everything can be applied in two ways, right? In a positive way or in a negative way. Like you are a doctor, you can use a scalpel to operate upon a patient, and you can use the same scalpel, a dacoit can use the same scalpel to cut somebody's throat. Right? The scalpel is just scalpel, but you know its application is what makes the difference. So the answer to your question is, when this varnashram is applied for the sake of Krishna in the center, then it is dharma. When it is not, then it is not dharma. Like for example, Duryodhana is a kshatriya, right? But is he following dharma? No. He is following his varna, but he is not following his dharma.
What's the difference between varna and kuladeva and jati?
We'll come to that later, as the texts come. Actually, it has no. It's a good point. It's not going to come. It's already in the first chapter. This that Shankara Narakayiva, Varna Shankar. So Krishna is saying that in the verse 20, 40 and 41. Adharma bhivavat Krishna, pradushyanti kulastriya, strishu dushtaishu vashneya, jayate varna sankara. Then Shankara narakaiva kulagnanan kulastacha, pitaro, patanti pitaro yeshan lupto pindadako kriya. So kula dharma means traditional following the dharma traditionally.
Like the father is a priest.
Father is a priest, so I am a priest. Yeah. So generally that was the system also in Varnashram. Because a Brahmana son used to be a Brahmana. But when there is Varna Shankara, then in the womb of a Brahmana woman, when a non-Brahmana is born, then it is called Varna Shankara. Generally, a Brahmana son will be Brahmanical by nature. When that didn't happen, that is Varna Shankara. So, Kula Dharma is this dharma that is traditionally being followed. And jati means a nation or a class or a caste. So these are the difference. Like say for example, Arya civilized human beings is one jati. But a Brahminical culture followed in a Brahminical family is Kula Dharma.
So below the Shudra,
Antajas. And the Chandal, all these, they fall in that category. Not Varna Shankara. That is Antaja, outcast. You see, civilized human society and outcast. They are uncivilized. They are not meant to live in society. They live in the outside, the society, in the forest.
So does Varna Shankara come in the civilization?
No, Varna Shankara is like what has happened is Varna Shankara now. Now what has happened is Varna Shankara. Like all the Varnas got mixed up. Like Brahmana's son, first of all, one who is claiming himself to be a Brahmana is not a Brahmana to begin with. And there is no way of knowing what his son will be like. Right? So that is Varna Shankara, mixed, admixture. But otherwise, the Varna, like a Brahminical Brahmana in prior to Kali Yuga, used to be Brahminical by nature. And his son would become a Brahmana. Because it's a matter of inviting the spirit soul, right? Taking birth is a matter of inviting the spirit soul in the womb of the mother. And when both father and mother are adherent to certain standard, according to their nature, a spirit soul will come as their progeny. Therefore, generally, in a Brahmana family, a child born in a Brahmana family would be Brahminical by nature, because the soul that has been attracted to the womb of that Brahmana woman is Brahminical by nature. And then also, from their childhood, they will see the practices are going on, right? Like a Brahmana boy will see that his father is performing fire sacrifice and the activities that he is doing. He will be influenced by that. So that will also have his impression on him, right? And like an example is like a mason, a stone carver. The father carves the stone, right? So when the child is little, what happens? He is with the father, he helps the father, gives him the hammer, gives him the chisel, right? And he sees his father is working, and at some point the father says, okay, do it. And probably he plays also in the same way. So from his childhood he is indoctrinated. So when he grows up, he naturally develops that occupation, right? But look what has happened now. Now the training is not coming from the family line. The training is going on in the schools, right? And it's that training is a hodgepodge, is a khichdi. like everybody is getting the same training. And then when they come to the age, they can select their vocation. But it is not naturally developing in them. And on top of everything, what one likes to do is not the consideration for his occupation. The consideration for occupation is how much money his occupation will bring. See, criteria is not what one likes to do. The motivating factor for what one does is money. Which occupation brings the best maximum amount of money? That occupation everybody wants to have. And those who are competent, they can get that occupation. Like for example, there was a time when the best students were becoming engineers. Right? Because engineers were making a lot of money. Then it changed, it shifted. The doctors started to make a lot of money. So everybody wanted to become doctors. Right? And then the computer programmers started to make a lot of money. So everyone wants to become computer programmer. So that shows that what one likes to do is not the consideration. What will bring them more money, that becomes the consideration. And as a result of that, what happened? No one is satisfied in this society. Because everybody is doing something that he doesn't like to do. Right? And that's why what happens when people work? They wait. When will be Friday? They wait for Friday. How many of you are working here? How do you wait for Friday? Because when the Friday comes, 2 days off. So what a relief from this drudgery of office work. And then how do you feel on Monday morning? Oh my God, again I have to go to this. So that shows what people are doing, they do not like to do. But they're doing it because that will bring them money. Whereas in Varnashram society, everybody is allowed to do what he likes to do. You like to paint? Okay, you paint. So one who likes to paint, he will paint. He would love to do it 24 hours a day, he will do that. He won't sleep, he won't eat, he'll just do that. Right? Isn't it? So that is the difference between today's society and Vedic society. In Vedic society, people had the opportunity to act according to their desire. But in today's society, People do not have that opportunity. They are doing it because it brings money. I think I'll take questions afterwards. Let us just go through the first. Yeah, please.
O son of Prithad, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy.
So here again, Krishna is using a very heavy expression, like calling Arjuna a Sudra. You know, in the Vedic society, if a Kshatriya is called a Shudra, what he would do? He would pull out his sword and he will take care. So Krishna is doing it in order to make Arjuna come to his senses, to wake Arjuna up from this weakness. And why is he calling Arjuna Sudra? Because Sudra is a person who doesn't know what to do and what not to do. And that is the nature of a Sudra. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya know what they need to do, what they want to do. But a Sudra doesn't. Therefore, a Sudra has to be employed. A Sudra has to be engaged by others. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, you are behaving like a Sudra. A person who doesn't know what to do and what not to do. You have come to a battlefield and you are saying you are not going to fight. Okay, next.
Arjuna Kumar. Arjuna Kumar. Katham Bhishma Maham.
Okay, I will just make a correction here. In Sanskrit, when there is an A at the end, that will be pronounced. Like for example, Arjuna Ubacha. Like Arjuna, it ends with an A, therefore it should be pronounced. Arjuna, and Ubacha also ends with an A, so Arjuna Ubacha.
Arjuna Ubacha, Katam Bhishmam Aham Sanchi, Dronam Cha Madhusudana, Ishubi, Kati Gosami, Pujarha, Translation. Arjuna said, O killer of the enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Vishnu and Drona who are worthy of my worship?
So here, Arjuna is justifying his action. That Krishna chastised him, that how can you develop this weakness? But Arjuna is justifying. He's saying, Krishna, how can I fight with Bhishma and Drona? They are my worshipable. And so in the Vedic culture, this respect for the senior is very, very precisely maintained. Whereas in non-Vedic culture, there is no respect. Right? But the Vedic culture is based on respect. Seniors must be respected, and the juniors must be cared for. That is what Vedic culture is. So, Bhishma is his grandfather and Drona is his teacher, guru. So therefore Arjuna is asking, how can I fight with them? They are my worshipable seniors, superiors. How can I shoot arrows at them? So this is how Arjun is justifying his stand. Now if I also, now we can also consider one point that Krishna will pointing, Krishna's point is that fine, it is they who decided to stand as your enemy. You tried to avoid the battle. Now if they sided with the wrong side, then why should you show weakness for them? That is the actual understanding. So in this respect we can see that Arjuna's calculation was wrong. When a person decides to be on the enemy side, then a kshatriya has to kill him. Because it is out of his own choice that he decided to be on that side. Okay, then the next point, next verse, yeah. It continues, the Arjuna is giving the giving the reasons why he shouldn't fight.
It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood.
Okay, next verse.
Not only know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care for them. Yet, they are now standing before us on the battlefield.
So Arjun, in this way, is justifying his stand. Okay, so now what do we see? That Arjun, although he is justifying with all these, justifying his stand with all the reasons he is giving, but still he is feeling that his decision was not correct. So he still has this dilemma, and therefore now he is surrendering himself to Krishna. He is saying karpanna dosha pahata swabhava, due to weakness, I have become confused and lost all composure. So I do not know what to do. So you please tell me what I should do. I am surrendering myself unto you, accepting you as my spiritual master. I am becoming your disciple. I am surrendering myself unto you, so please instruct me. So this way we can see that how sincere Arjuna is. Yeah.
Arjuna gives so many reasons not to fight. So what makes him, why did he suddenly develop this doubt in his...
Yeah, he is giving the reasons, but he himself is not convinced. At the back of his mind, he is thinking that I am giving these reasons, but these reasons are not really valid. So he had this feeling at the back of his mind. Therefore, now he is telling Krishna, you please tell me what I should do.
And what does he refer to as weakness as miserly?
Weakness as miserly. You see, the weakness and miserly means one who doesn't want to spend his money, or one who doesn't want to use his resources, right? So, and there are two considerations. One is narrow mind and broad mind, right? Kripana and Mahajana. One who is narrow-minded. This narrowness of the mind is caused by what? Ignorance. Right? So this weakness is caused by ignorance due to narrow-mindedness of my vision, perception. That's why it's miserly.
So we understood that his vision was narrow in all these...
Yeah, because he has been... As I mentioned, he has been influenced by Jogamaya and he's bewildered. Arjuna is a Mahajan. These are the two things. Mahajan, opposite to Mahajan, is a Kripana. And the word Karpanya is coming from the word Kripana. So devotees are Mahajans because they understand what is Krishna's plan, what is Krishna's desire, and act accordingly. So he is now seeing that he is acting in a miserly way and not recognizing his actual duty. That's why he is considering this weakness to be miserly. Yeah, next is... Yeah. So, okay, next. Okay, so Sanjay is now perceiving what Arjuna is doing. Arjuna spoke like that, and now Arjuna is saying that I will not fight. So this is the description of Sanjay. And then the next verse also, Read it. Okay, if you have difficulty, don't worry. Just read the
sentence. Elephant of Bharata, at this time, Krishna, smiling in the midst of those Gosvami, spoke the following words to preach to Arjuna.
Okay. You have a question. You raised your hand. Your name is Mike. Give him the mic. Give him the mic.
Vaiko.
Yeah.
I just it was asked before, but this question, why Arjuna is after asking the advice from Krishna in two verses, why he had immediately did this decision not to fight?
Yeah, actually what Arjun did is he surrendered to Krishna and told him to guide him. And then, because he is withdrawing himself like that, he doesn't know what to do, and his thing is that I'm not going to fight. His answer is, I'm not going to fight. So he surrenders. He surrenders and he is now waiting for Krishna to guide him. And this is how Arjun decided not to fight. Now at the end, what do we see? At this point, Arjun is not going to fight. Then Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Then what do we see? He picks up the bows and arrows and starts to fight. Right? So that is the meaning. I do not know what to do. So I decided not to fight. Now you tell me what I should do. And then when Krishna told him, then what did Arjun say? Nashta moha smritir labdha. My bewilderment has been dispelled. I regain my memory. Tat prasadat maya chitta. By your mercy, Krishna. And I will fight. I will do whatever you want. Karishe bachanam tava. I will do whatever you want me to do. Now, do you see that from this point of not fighting to that point, how did the transformation take place? Because of Krishna's instruction. Right? So this also makes another very important point. Don't take to Krishna consciousness blindly. Take Krishna consciousness with proper understanding. Right? Krishna consciousness is not a blind process. It's not a matter of blind faith. Become situated in knowledge. And this knowledge is given in Bhagavad Gita. Why should we surrender unto Krishna? That is what Bhagavad Gita is. Okay.
While speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of me. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead.
So here, actually Bhagavad Gita begins. Krishna starts to speak Bhagavad Gita from this point onwards. What did Krishna say? Krishna is saying that Arjun, you are lamenting for something that one should not lament for. Yet, you are speaking like a wise man. But a wise man doesn't lament for something that is temporary. If you lament for something that is temporary, is it wise? If a child plays, if a child cries for the toy, broken toy, is it wise? Because the toy is going to break, and for how long he can play with the toy, right? But if a child plays with the toy, cries for the broken toy, and speaks like a wise man, how will it sound? If he says, I am not this body, I am a spirit soul. And the next moment, he starts to cry for his broken toy. Will it be befitting his words? No. So isn't Arjuna's situation somewhat like that? From Krishna's perspective, Krishna is pointing out to Arjuna. Arjuna, you're speaking like a wise man, but look how you're behaving. You're crying for the broken toys, or the toys that may break. This body, what's the difference between a toy and the body? The only difference is this is made of flesh and blood, and the other is made of just some metal or clay. Right? So grown-ups may not be attached to the toy, but if they're attached to the bodies, it's also similar childish mentality. That's what Krishna is pointing out to us. Okay? So what is Krishna pointing out? That the body is temporary. And? What's that? Yeah.
He's saying we are eternal.
Yeah, who is eternal? Now let him answer. Okay, it's all right. It's okay. Give it. Yeah, the body is temporary, but the soul is eternal. So he's pointing out that there was never a time when you and I did not exist. And in future also, there will never be a time when we will not exist. So why are you lamenting about the loss? What are you lamenting about? What is Arjuna lamenting about? Arjuna is lamenting about the body. Arjuna is crying over the toys. Right? Is it wise to cry over a toy? No. So Krishna is pointing out, now Krishna is actually explaining the real identity of a living entity. Yes?
Maharaj, how does this verse reflect individuality of the soul that Srila Prabhupada speaks about in October? How can we see the individuality?
Yeah, the individuality Krishna is saying, the question is how this verse refers to the individuality that Prabhupada is speaking in the purport. The individuality here is indicated by Krishna is saying that you, me, and all those kings. There was never a time when we did not exist. And there will never be a time in future when we will not exist. That means you will exist, these kings will exist, and I will exist. So we are going to continue to exist individually. Get it? Like you, that you are, you will be also in the future. So this is what the individuality. We'll maintain our individuality even after death. Not that after death we'll merge into some primordial soup or some light. as less intelligent people say. Yes, Shatamanjari. So, in this verse, Krishna is making a very, very important point. What is that point, Shetamanjari? Can you explain? Look at the verse and say. Read the translation.
As the body so continually passes from this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body of death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change.
Yeah.
If we realize, yes, that the soul is eternal.
What happens to the body? What is happening to everybody's body?
It's changing.
Okay. But?
The soul is remaining the same.
How do you know?
Think.
Sri Krishna is saying what? Kumaram Jovanam Jara. Boyhood, youth, old age. The body changes. A boy's body, a young man's body, an old man's body is the same? No. Now, even though the body is not the same, is the person same?
Yes.
Okay, so who is that person?
That's
spirit soul. That's the point Krishna is making. The body changes, but in spite of the change of the body, the soul doesn't change. Right? Therefore, the soul will continue to exist even if the body is not there. Logical? In spite of the change of the body, soul doesn't change. Even if one leaves the body behind, then what will happen? The soul will continue to exist. Right? And then the soul will get another new body. And he'll again he'll go through boyhood to youth to old age. Then again he'll leave the body. And in this way, dehantara prapti. The soul transmigrates from one body to another body. Therefore, a person who is situated in knowledge, dhira, he doesn't become bewildered by this changing of bodies. Clear? Okay. Yes.
Does the soul undergo any evolution during its passage from a child's body to an elderly person, like manifestations?
Okay. For answer is no. Say, for example, body is actually a machine. So you bought a car, right? The car is new. Then after 1 year it becomes little old, then after 5 years it becomes more old, and then after 10 years you discard it. Right? The car may change and become a junk. Right? Now, does it affect your identity, the car's transformation?
No, it doesn't. But I was just comparing the spirit soul in an animal to a human being. Although the spirit soul is the same, the soul is more evolved in the human body.
Yeah. That is not the soul, that is the subtle body. The subtle body. We have two bodies, gross body and the subtle body. The gross body is made of five gross elements and the subtle body is made of five subtle elements. So the subtle body is changing, right? And you see, subtle body can have a state of coverings. The more covered it is, the more gross it is, or lower is the consciousness. The more covered, the consciousness is covered. The soul is, it's like the soul is the source of light. And the subtle body is the covering to the light. Right? Now, when there is more covering, less light will come out. And when there is less covering, more light will come out. And when there is no covering, then all the light will come out. So that is the condition. Like, the higher levels of existence means the less covering of the subtle body. Yes.
Before going to this next verse, can I ask one question about this? You mentioned this lamentation now, and Arjuna also he said it actually, his illusion or ignorance was dispelled. And I think we could see in the Kurukshetra that he actually, when he was, his son of the morning skill, he was lamenting like anything. And what is this actually? This, lamentation means actually, because is it like some kind of the real lamentation means that you are not able to like carry out your duties anymore, or you, what is this?
Now, what is the meaning of lamentation?
Yeah,
what is lamentation?
Yeah.
What is the meaning of lamentation? No, no. Lamentation means repentance. You're repenting for doing something. Right? You're feeling guilty to do something. That is lamentation. You got it?
I
couldn't.
You mentioned that body is a broken toy.
Broken toy, okay. Okay.
Broken toy,
yeah.
But in the end, it's not like broken toy, it's like only like if somebody like, no, his body has problems, he's suffering, and somebody else, or he's dead, still there can be some emotions and feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. The point actually, the example that I gave was to imply that when you are playing with a toy, when you're excited about the toy, when you get it, and when it breaks, you cry, is it a sign of maturity? When somebody plays with a toy, right, and becomes affected by the toy, like when something happens to the toy, he starts to cry. Is it a sign of maturity?
Yes.
No. So that is the point. Similarly, or Krishna is pointing out that when you are lamenting over the loss of the body, it is not a sign of maturity. It's immaturity.
Like the lamentation is like a load. On other cases, if you just lose relationships.
Okay, the point is it good to lament over something that is temporary?
You can lament, but it should not affect your activities. You can have some.
Anyway, you see, when you are reading Bhagavad Gita, you try to get into tune with what Krishna is saying. Don't challenge Krishna's statements. Right? Try to understand why Krishna is saying it. Yeah.
I just had one question regarding the verse Deino Sunyatate. Last night one devotee asked me a question. next body? Is there a time gap? Because we know that they have to suffer in the hellish planets, or they may have to, you know, enjoy the results of their body's activities. So the question was, do they temporarily go to the heavenly planets and then come back and then take on another body, or they just take on another body in the heavenly planets? Similarly, the sufferings that they go through in the hellish planets, is there a time lag before they take on the next body? And if it is, then what's the time gap? You know, is it like next month?
Okay. Anyway, I will answer your question. But I'll also set a standard. Like, when we are discussing, let us limit our discussions to the topic, the verses that we are discussing. Anyway, as I said, I'll answer. There is no hard and fast time limit as such. It will depend upon the person's state of consciousness. In simple words, more sinful people will take a longer time to get the next body. And less sinful people will take less time to get the next body, right? Like, for example, after Hiranyakashipu was dead, right? How long did it take him to get the next body? Do you know? It took one yuga. In Satya Yuga, he was Hiranyakashipu. And the next is in Treta Yuga. So how many years it took him? Right? Whereas sometimes some devotees, what happens? They leave their body, they immediately go back to God. And Dhruva Maharaj, what happened? A chariot came from Vaikuntha to take him to God. Right? So these are two extremes. And there are unlimited possibilities in between. Okay? Okay, Hare Krishna. Yes.
Next question.
Yeah.
For some of quiti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception or sign of parata. And one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed.
Very good. So, what is the criteria for happiness and pain in this material nature? It is a matter of degree and our sense perception. Matra and sparsha. Matra means degree and sparsha means perception. Like, now it is summertime. It is quite hot, and if somebody asks you to take a bath in hot water, how will you feel? It won't be very comfortable. But when it is winter, then somebody gives you hot water, how do you like it? Right? Or when it is winter, you sit next to the fire and you warm yourself next to the fireplace and you keep yourself warm. It's so nice to sit in front of the fireplace. But when it is hot, especially in countries like India, in summertime, if you're asked to sit next to fire, how will you feel? So it's the same fire, same temperature, but in some condition it is pleasing, some condition it is painful. Why is that? Because it is a matter of degree and our sense perception. In winter, it is very nice to be in a hot situation, but in summer, it is painful to be in that situation. So it's all a matter of degree and sense perception. So that is what our happiness and pain in this material nature is. Yes. Yes. Yeah. If you have difficulty in reading Sanskrit, read the English. Just read the English.
Obey the moment, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, and is steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation.
Okay. So what it means? Now we can see that Krishna, although previously he insulted Arjuna by calling him a Sudra, but now he is calling him, O best of men. So this is Krishna's way of dealing. Sometimes hot, sometimes cold. Sometimes chastisement, sometimes kerosene. So he's saying that a person who doesn't become affected by happiness and distress and steady in both, he is fit for liberation, eligible for liberation. Means he can free himself from this material bondage. And what will be the bottom line, although Krishna is not saying that, how can one be steady in happiness and distress? By remembering Krishna. By being situated in his spiritual identity. So the only way one can become free from the duality of this material nature, when he becomes Krishna conscious. So that is the underlying fact in this statement. Okay, next. Okay.
Martha's curse will continue, but still, how can he be steady?
How can he?
One who is Krishna conscious, even that individual, has to tolerate this Martha
and Sparsha. Okay, say, you are a heart surgeon, right? When you operate on a patient, how do you do it? Cut open his heart, right? Does he scream? Why not?
Yeah, you take away his senses.
Okay, and through anesthetics. Anesthetics withdraws his senses, sense perceptions, right? So when the sense perception is withdrawn, the feeling is not there, right? At that time, he doesn't care for whether it's hot or cold, whether it's painful or pleasing. Now, that is what Krishna consciousness does. Anesthetics do it artificially. But it is naturally happens in Krishna consciousness. Now see, what is the consciousness? Body consciousness? Our consciousness is flowing through the nervous system. Right? Now, when you become Krishna conscious, where is your consciousness? Where is your consciousness? When you become Krishna conscious, where is your consciousness? In Krishna. So what happens to body consciousness? Pure Krishna consciousness will completely withdraw that consciousness. The more Krishna conscious you become, the less you'll have your body consciousness. So when you don't have your body consciousness, now tell me, pleasure and pain are relative to what? Relative to the body. So when you don't have any body consciousness, do you have any consciousness of pleasure and pain? So that's what happens.
So this actually happens in people.
Yes, Krishna consciousness means consciousness is withdrawn to Krishna. Ultimately, let's put it this way. Ultimately, where the consciousness comes from? It comes from Krishna. Now, through devotional service, when we render devotional service, we actually become connected to that source of consciousness, Krishna. As opposed to now, what is our consciousness? But our soul is giving out consciousness and it is permeating through the body. Right? But when you become Krishna conscious, then what happens? The soul becomes aware of Krishna. Becomes connected to Krishna. He becomes connected to the source of consciousness. So by being connected to the source of consciousness, his consciousness from the body is withdrawn. So that is how scientific a process Krishna consciousness is. Yeah, Hare Krishna. Yes.
Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that non-existent.
Did you read the Sanskrit? Or you're taking the easy way? Give it a try. You read it yesterday nicely.
Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both.
So, these verses are actually very important, huh? So you all very carefully read these verses and try to understand the meanings. So Krishna is making a very, very important point here. He is saying that of the non-existent, which is the material body, there is no endurance. And of the soul, there is no change. So he is actually pointing out that the material body's existence is non-existent. That is what ultimately he is pointing out, because it is not important. It is an imprisonment. It is by nature's arrangement in order to give us punishment that nature has given this material body. Soul doesn't need this body. This body has been imposed upon the soul. Therefore, the body is not at all important. Of course, there is another consideration. That is, as long as we have this body, we must use it in Krishna's service. But it's not that in order to render service to Krishna, we always need this body. Krishna devotional service is not rendered through the body. But as long as our consciousness is in the body, we engage the body in the service of Krishna. But pure devotional service is rendered by the pure spirit soul. Therefore, we don't really need this body. It's not necessary. Therefore, he's pointing out, of the material body, there is no endurance. But the soul is eternal, the soul is everlasting, and for the soul there is no change. Soul is unchanging, constant factor, absolute factor.
So Guru has
explained
that even if the soul has an individuality, is that individuality also that doesn't change?
No, individuality doesn't change. Like, the individual soul always remains an individual soul. But only change is whether he is in Maya or whether he is engaged in Krishna's service. That's the only consideration. So that is that which pervades the entire body. What pervades the entire body? How many of you know? Raise your hands, those who know what pervades the entire body. Okay. Vayu, you tell. You raise. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, you gave me. Yeah. What pervades through the entire body? Consciousness. Yeah. So consciousness pervades through the entire body. So what pervades through the entire body is indestructible. So I am existing because of what? Tell me. You are existing. Why do you think you are existing? Actually, because you think, therefore you are existing. Right? There was a famous French philosopher, Descartes. His famous statement was, I think, therefore I am. Isn't it? I think, therefore I am. Which means, I am conscious, therefore I am. When I am conscious, will I be or will I not be?
I will be.
Say for example, when you fall asleep and you are dreaming, are you there or not? Yes. But when you are not dreaming, when you are in deep sleep, are you existing or not? No. When you don't have consciousness, you do not know whether you are or whether you are not. Right? When you are in deep sleep, are you there or not? Because you are not conscious, you are not. Your existence is relative to your consciousness. So if consciousness, Krishna is pointing out, that consciousness will always continue to exist. That cannot be destroyed. That is indestructible. So I am because I am conscious. My consciousness will not cease to exist. Therefore, I will continue to exist. Make sense?
So that's what. Sleep,
yeah.
I thought I saw somewhere in the book, I can't recall, but there are three states of consciousness. One is wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. I thought I saw that.
No, deep sleep is not a state of consciousness. Deep sleep is this. There are three states of existence. In deep sleep, you don't have consciousness, do you? What happened? Use your intelligence. Use your common sense. No, subconscious is not deep sleep. Subconscious is dream. When you are deep sleep is unconscious. Do you know the state of unconsciousness? Anyway, when you are not conscious, are you existing? Yes, as a soul you are there, but you are not aware of your existence. That is the meaning of So what is really synonymous to your existence?
Consciousness.
And Krishna is saying that consciousness is indestructible. That will not perish. That consciousness is eternal. The soul is conscious. Now, the problem actually is, since our consciousness is relative to our body, therefore sometimes this body is active, sometimes the body is in dream, and sometimes in relation to the body we are unconscious. But in its pure state, the soul is always conscious. In relation to the body, there may be wakeful. What is the wakeful state? Can you think about it? What is wakeful state?
Like how we are here right now.
What does it mean?
Fully conscious.
What does it mean? Gross body consciousness. When you are in the consciousness of when our gross body is conscious, that is wakeful state. When our subtle body is conscious, that is dream state. And when both gross and subtle body are not conscious, that is deep sleep. Anyway, take note of it and think about it. Yeah.
What is the soul inactive in deep sleep, what is the soul doing? It's just like.
At least in relation to the body, it's not active. Right? The soul is in body consciousness. The soul's consciousness is only related to the body in the material nature. Because the soul can be functioning in two states of consciousness. Either in self-body consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Right? So we are withdrawn from Krishna consciousness. That region, that world, we left. Now we are in this world, in the world of body consciousness. So when it is not in gross or subtle body consciousness, what is the condition of the soul? That state is called dormant state. Deep sleep. unconscious state.
So in case of a pure devotee, a pure devotee in deep sleep is also...
Yeah, a pure devotee is Krishna conscious. So his consciousness is not relative to the body. So even when the body is asleep, his consciousness is awake because it is in Krishna consciousness.
The unconscious state that you are talking about in deep sleep, is it ignorance or idea?
Yeah, naturally. Deep ignorance. So ignorant that you do not even know who you are, what is the state you are in. Completely covered over. Yes.
I don't understand this. Like, if we are awake, we are engrossed by the conscious, and when we are sleeping, we are insulted by the conscious. Because if I sleep still, I perceive myself as not this body. I don't perceive myself as intelligent or mind or body somehow. But you mean that?
Okay. When you are awake. And a mosquito bites you. What do you do? Huh? What do you do? Okay. When you are asleep, and there is a snake next to you in the bed, what do you do? Huh? Yeah, do you see? Okay, let's put it this way. If you see a snake next to you, what will you do?
If I'm awake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you are asleep, there is a snake just next to your bed. What will you do?
I continue sleeping.
Continuously. Right. So are you conscious of your body at that time? You are conscious of your subtle body. So you have to understand the difference between gross body and subtle body. Huh? Okay, fine. That's a good point. In a dream, you are sleeping, seeing a snake. How do you react? Huh? You jump up and run, right? Who runs? Your body running or you run? Which body is running? Right. And that's called subtle body. Okay? Very good. The material body is destructible. But this body, whose body it is? Whose body? It is the body of the self. It is my body, right? Our body or the soul's body. So that's what Krishna is pointing out. This body of indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal soul will always come to an end. Will there be any body that will live forever? Did Hiranyakashipu's body last forever? He wanted to become immortal. Immortal means he wanted that his body will last forever. Did his body last forever? No. Brahma, who has such a long duration of life, will he last forever? No. Why? Because these are their material body. The material body will eventually come to an end. But the soul is eternal. The soul is indestructible, immeasurable and eternal. So this is the point that we have to properly understand. This is what we actually have to realize. That this body is perishable, but the soul is eternal. Now, who are you? Are you the body or are you the soul? How many of you think you are your bodies? How many of you think that you are your souls? So you are your... What happened to you?
I'm confused.
Okay. Arjun also was confused. Yeah, okay. Now at least, yeah, very good point. Huh? But now that we are discussing about this, what do you think you are?
I think I'm the soul.
Huh? You think you are the soul. Right. And that is the point. We have to at least understand that we are soul, but now we have to realize that we are the soul. From body consciousness, we have to transform our consciousness to Krishna consciousness. And that is the constitutional position of the soul. Yes.
So if the soul is dormant, how does the soul
awaken? If the soul is?
Awaken. When the soul is dormant, then how does the soul awaken?
Yeah. Soul is dormant means, you see, consider the soul is giving out consciousness. Right? And when the soul doesn't give out the consciousness, right? When there is no consciousness, then what is that state? Dormant means what? The expression dormant means?
Not doing anything.
Okay. So it is dormant. It is non-functional, right? It's not functioning. So that is the state. When consciousness is not coming out of the soul, then it is called dormant or in a dormant state. The soul exists, but it is not giving out consciousness. And it happens in a material condition. The soul is conscious of the body, right? And when the soul cannot continue the consciousness with the body, through the, you see, like it's like this. The soul is transmitting consciousness through the body, right? Now it is an artificial thing. Therefore it becomes tired, right? It cannot give out consciousness through the body anymore. Therefore it needs to fall asleep. Right? It's something like, you know, you're carrying a big load. For how long can you carry the big load? Huh? Not for very long. Now, the tiny little poor spirit soul that has the size of 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair has to come carry this big hulk of this body. Right? For how long can it carry on? It carries on for 8 hours, 12 hours, 16 hours. Then he says, I had enough. Enough of it. So he dumps the body. Right? I'm not going to carry. Okay, for the, or he thinks that for the time being, let me take a little rest. So he takes the burden of the body and puts it down. Or takes the load and puts it down. Right? So that is the state of sleep. Isn't sleep wonderful? Huh? Isn't it wonderful to get relieved from carrying a big load? Huh? So that is why sleep is so desirable. Therefore we need sleep. We can't continuously carry on with this body's burden. But on the other hand, when you become Krishna conscious, do we have any burden to carry? Therefore, there is no tiredness. Therefore, a pure devotee is Gurakesha. Arjun is Gurakesha. He is a conqueror of sleep. He doesn't need to sleep.
And in that state, then, the soul is not dormant.
In that state, no, in the spiritual state, the soul is never dormant. In the spiritual state, the soul never comes to a state of unconsciousness. Okay, a last question? Yeah. Okay, there is two stages of Krishna consciousness, practicing stage and purified stage, right? When we are practicing, then we come across the situation like what you're mentioning. But when we become pure Krishna conscious, in a pure state of Krishna consciousness, then that won't happen. Therefore, pure Krishna consciousness is unconditional and uninterrupted. Ahaituki and apratihata. There is no interruption. Whereas in the practicing stage, because we are actually practicing to convert our consciousness from material side or body consciousness to Krishna consciousness, because we are dealing with the body, there is the need for interruption. But in pure Krishna consciousness, there is no interruption. Okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, we'll see you all again at 3:30. Hare Krishna. And we'll continue from that side onwards. And today, anyway, let's see how much... We have done up to text 18, right? Yeah. Thank you, Hare Krishna, all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada. That everybody. Yeah. I'll start with your question.